Hello, I'm Yevgenia Nusinovich. Welcome to the Science Translational Medicine podcast for August 20th, 2014. In this show, I will be speaking with Dr. Timothy Wong of the Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons about his new study of the way nerves affect gastric cancer. The nervous system has a variety of effects on cells and tissues throughout the body. Some studies in prostate cancer have shown that nerves can infiltrate tumors and help them grow and spread. Nerves are also thought to influence the growth and proliferation of gut stem cells and may affect the cells that give rise to stomach cancer. Now, the groups of Timothy Wong at Columbia University and Duan Chen at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology used mouse models to demonstrate the role of the vagal nerve in the growth of gastric tumors, as well as the anti-tumor effects of suppressing it by surgical removal or drug treatment. Here now is Dr. Wong on the line to tell us more. Welcome, Dr. Wong, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here and to explain the research that Dr. Duan Chen and I have been involved with now over the last 3 or 4 years.
Dr. Wong, how did you decide to study the nervous system in cancer?
Well, it really came out of my experience with the Tumor Microenvironment Network, an NCI-funded network of investigators that was very interested in the effects of stromal cells on the development and progression of cancer. And among the topics that were discussed, in addition to matrix proteins and fibroblasts and myeloid cells, several investigators raised the question as to whether nerves could also be involved as part of the tumor microenvironment. And after much discussion, it was recognized that, in fact, stomach cancer was an ideal model or target for studying the role of nerves, given the fact that the stomach had a very well-defined parasympathetic innervation with the vagal nerve, the vagus, which in fact branches into two separate trunks, each innervating half of the stomach. And so we recognized that that was an opportunity to actually surgically intervene and address the question as to whether or not nerves, particularly the vagus, could actually modulate the development of stomach cancer in some of the mouse models that we had developed over the years. So I recognize that the ideal collaborator for this sort of project was Duan Chen, a well-trained surgeon who was one of the experts in performing surgery on the mouse stomach. And he and I had collaborated on numerous projects, some of which involved looking at the role of the vagus nerve in the regulation of acid secretion as well as gastrin secretion, one of the important stomach hormones. So we proposed this collaboration whereby he would use our mouse model of gastric cancer, this was the INSGAS model, to study the effect of surgically cutting one or both of the vagal trunks on the development of gastric cancer in this mouse model. And in fact, the result was extremely surprising that cutting the vagus nerve to one half of the stomach blocked the development of stomach cancer on only half the stomach, but not the other half that remained innervated, thus demonstrating a very local and specific effect of nervous innervation on the development of tumors in the mouse stomach.
How does the activity of the vagal nerve promote the growth of gastric tumors?
Well, once we recognized that cutting the vagus nerve to the stomach inhibited tumor growth, we had a number of questions about how this was in fact working and whether this was a direct effect or an indirect effect. One possibility, for example, was that it could be a systemic effect, but the fact that it was only half of the stomach really suggested it was very, very local. But to confirm this, we then went to a form of chemical denervation where we injected a well-known chemical, botulinum toxin or Botox, in half the stomach. Again, it blocked tumor development. And that began us thinking that it, in fact, was a very, very local or direct effect. And in collaboration with Michael Gershon here at Columbia, we had previously looked at the role of nerves in possibly regulating proliferation and or stem cell activity. And so we began thinking that perhaps the vagus nerve and cholinergic signaling was regulating specifically stem cells. So to look at this in more detail, one of the postdoctoral researchers in my group, Yoku Hayakawa, had developed a nice organoid or gastric gland culture. And we actually looked in vitro at direct interactions between nerves and stem cells in this sort of organoid culture. And what we realized is that when we cultured nerves and gastric glands together, the nerves would actually grow towards the stem cells in the culture. And then again, if we blocked this signaling with either botulinum toxin or Botox, or a specific blocker of the acetylcholine receptor, such as scopolamine, this would block the growth of stem cells in this in vitro culture. And further analysis of gene expression arrays showed that, in fact, nerve signaling, and particularly cholinergic signaling, was regulating the Wnt pathway. And this is a pathway that involves, in the end, beta-catenin, a nuclear transcription factor, which stimulates growth within the GI tract in a number of different stem and progenitor cell populations. So, in fact, we were able to define in vitro that nerves were really regulating stem cells. And overall, over time, this would lead to the development of cancer stem cells in our model, with the upregulation of numerous sort of cancer stem cell markers, including CD44 and LGR5. So we really believe that nerves are really part of the normal stem cell niche within the gastric mucosa, and that dysregulation of this pathway, or perhaps overactivity of this pathway, could in fact promote the development of stomach cancer, and that by blocking this, we could inhibit gastric tumor growth.
So given that scopolamine, an anticholinergic agent, is useful, at least in these mouse models, is there any potential that patients who receive anticholinergic agents like scopolamine or even Benadryl for nausea could benefit from them for anti-cancer purposes?
Well, we certainly have thought about that, and we have yet to test systemic cholinergic blockade, particularly muscarinic blockade, in our animal models over the long periods of time. It certainly is a possibility in terms of approaching this, but we would have to look at both the duration of therapy, the possible toxic side effects, and how well this sort of interacted with other forms of chemotherapy. But it's certainly one of the things that we're thinking about or looking at and would like to study in more detail in our animal models, but I think it's worth exploring.
So what are the next steps that would be needed to translate these results for clinical use?
Well, I think part of it would be to determine which group of patients might benefit the most from anticholinergic or inhibition of nervous innervation of the tumors. For example, in terms of local treatment, we still are thinking about the possibility of a local injection of botulinum toxin into tumor sites or to tumors perhaps that are resectable or difficult to resect as an adjunctive form of therapy. In terms of routine treatment of gastric cancer, it's certainly recognized that patients who are cured of gastric cancer typically undergo surgical resection. So the idea of looking a little more carefully at performing simultaneously denervation of the tumor along with resection may be an important consideration in the overall surgical approach. And many of the surgeries that are currently being undertaken, particularly in the Far East, really do extensive denervation of the tumors more so than the routine surgeries that are done in the West. But the idea of combining perhaps anticholinergic, particularly anti-muscarinic therapy, and I forgot to mention that our work really does suggest that it's one specific muscarinic receptor, the M3 receptor, that appears to be predominant in terms of signaling through this pathway, that drugs possibly targeted towards this specific receptor could be used in combination with currently available therapies, including standard chemotherapy.
Dr. Wang, thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations on a fascinating paper.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure to participate in this podcast.
That was Dr. Timothy Wang of the Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons. Check out his paper in the August 20th issue of Science Translational Medicine by going to our website at stm.sciencemag.org. I'm Evgenia Nusinovich. Thanks for listening. This podcast is a production of Science Translational Medicine and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, working together to advance science and serve society.